Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Tuesday, July 27th. 63 degrees currently in Old Town Park City with some clouds. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cesar Cornejo. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. So far today, we expect to see those clouds be an indicator that we will have storm activity hanging around us, and some of it can be heavy at times. We'll see that, of course, that shower and storm possibility will still linger for us throughout the day. We're going to see a high of 84. And then tonight, as the storms start to die down, we'll be left with mostly cloudy skies and a low of 61. Tomorrow, we do it all over again. We start off with a little bit of some parting clouds, but then as we continue through the day, heavy rain is possible. We'll see a high of 85. And as we go to Wednesday night and continue to see the storms start to slowly die out, we'll have mostly cloudy skies for our overnight with a low of 59. And Thursday, we continue to expect to see some storm chances, mostly sunny to start off the day. And we'll see that those storms do happen towards the afternoon and evening time frame. And as we'll see a high of 82, we then see that storms slowly fizzle out into the evening, becoming showers and then stopping for us with a low of 60 for Thursday night. Friday, we expect to see, again, another round of some storm activity for us, where we have better chances of seeing showers and storms once again. A high of 80 is expected. Friday night, we'll still continue seeing that thunderstorm activity lingering into the evening, and then chance of showers through some of the overnight hours with a low of 58. Saturday, we expect to see that we have plenty of storm chances once again. It is monsoon season, after all. We'll see a high of 77. And going into Saturday night, we're expecting to see that the storm chances will continue until about the overnight hours and then slowly taper down with mostly cloudy skies for a low of 58. Sunday, again, showers and thunderstorms. It's just like clockwork. We continue to see this activity really hanging around, and we'll see a high of 75. And for Sunday night, while those chances start to slow down and really fizzle out overnight, we'll see mostly cloudy skies once again with a low of 57. Monday, we continue to see that we have the possibility of some chance showers and thunderstorms with partly sunny skies and a high of 74. From the ABC Forecast Center, I'm meteorologist Cesar Cornejo. Back to you, Leslie.
Thanks, Cesar. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be talking with Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. We'll be taking a look at the agenda for today's second day of the county council retreat, as well as tomorrow's county council meeting. Also, Park City Board of Realtors Executive Director Jamie Johnson will be in studio. I'll have Nate Johnson, who recently presented a seminar on smart growth to local members, on the phone. And finally, Park City Leadership Founder Miles Radiman with details on applying for next year's leadership group class 28. Also, a memorial service for Park City Fire District Chief Paul Hewitt has been scheduled for this Thursday, July 29th, 5:30 p.m. at the Park City Eccles Center on Kearns Boulevard. Chief Hewitt passed away Friday due to injuries suffered in an accident. July 19th, all are welcome. The Summit County Council meeting today in a two-day retreat at the Hinckley Scout Ranch, and we'll be back in Colville tomorrow for their regular meeting. On the phone with a preview, I have Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Leslie.
First, just any comments regarding Chief Paul Hewitt?
Well, I mean, it's such a tragedy for the community, and especially for his family. You know, he still has his kids that are in high school and college, and you know, he was such a force of nature, both for the fire district and for us locally, and for his family and his friends, that it's a big loss to the community.
And while he answered to the fire district's administrative control board, the fire district is a special service district, so ultimately the county has authority there?
Well, yes, the special service district is under the auspices of the county council as a governing board, and then they appoint a administrative control board to help run the district. That's correct.
Okay, and I know that the administrative control board meeting later today. Do you have any idea in terms of what they're planning to do from here?
No, I'm sure they want to. The district leadership, the staff, on on how they're handling things and what the district will do. They will probably discuss succession planning in that regard. However, I mean, I think we want to be very sensitive to the family as they go through their grieving process and the community goes through its grieving process. The district is very well run, very well managed. Certainly one of the Paul is that he set up the system to be able to operate without him. So they will do that for a period of time as they make decisions going forward.
Now, the county council took a couple of weeks off, just what, scheduled vacations, things like that?
Well, we purposely took a couple of weeks off this year just to give the council a little break. It did help that one of those weeks coincided with some NACO meetings or the National Association of Counties, and it allowed everybody to look at the time to take some vacations, correct?
Okay, and the council and staff spent the bulk of yesterday with the council making presentations of their highest priorities. So do we have a list? Is there something that the public can look at this point?
Well, we'll have all that information available after the meet and as we get back into town. And it will be made available. But, you know, we really wanted to slow down and listen to the council for a while. And that was the purpose of presentations yesterday and some question and answer periods between the senior staff and the council. And we haven't been able to gather for such a meeting really until now. So having a new council member that joined the council in January, because of the restrictions of remote meetings for quite a while and other things, this is the first opportunity that the council had and really discuss their priority group and hear what might have changed over that last, say, 17 months.
Yeah. So you're going to get back today, a little bit later, to these strategic priorities. I know that, as you mentioned, the staff kind of discussing the council projects. Did they throw any of them out, or just say, you know what, we can't deal with this one right now? Or
well, I think the interesting part is that, you know, because of what we've experienced over the last 2 years, some tweaks to some of these priorities might have happened. You know, we've heard a lot about regional planning and how do we work with other communities within the Wasatch Back? How do we work with the state and how that how their business plays into what we do locally with other local governments? And then, of course, we are starting to see a lot of growth pressure on the east side of the county. So other, you know, there's kind of regional that we need to be concerned about. There's the regional of the Wasatch, and there's the internal look at all of our communities and how growth and development is starting to impact those areas, and how does that affect our county government. And so I think you're going to see a lot of the strategic priorities and probably some of the work that comes out of that start to deal with some of those issues.
All right. You also gave a budget overview yesterday. How are things looking?
Well, I mean, we've been giving budget overviews really the whole year. This is somewhat of an update on revenues. Revenues still looking very strong. It's a much different picture than what we were looking at when we adopted 21 budget. And so it provides us a little flexibility. Plus, we are holding back on expending some of those American Rescue Plan dollars in order to see what the state does with matching grants, which will also help some of our budget situation.
All right. We also received our bills for the annual trash collection going up $20 in a year. This couldn't be phased in gradually, huh?
Well, I mean, so we started this program in approximately the 2017 period. We knew that the annual trash bill really should be, if we were going to fully cover that with fees, would be in that $200 to $220 a year per household. And so it has been the desire with the council over time to phase that in. And yes, $20 is a big jump in a year, but it is still not getting close to that mark of fully funding itself. But it has to be incremental. So I don't know whether that means that we'll take another jump in 2022 or not. But it will be discussed as part of the budget process.
Yeah. So how high can it go? If we can go up $20 in a year.
Well, I mean, if it could be at some time in the future, depending on how we decide to govern the program, that there's a change that future councils or future decision makers about solid waste collection could decide to fully fund it from fees. It can't be more than fully funded with fees. There's certainly state law limits on what we can do with that. We have traditionally covered it with a combination of fees and properties. But the costs keep going up. I mean, it's not a business that gets cheaper over time. So you add on top of that a lot of desire within our community to do more of our solid waste program, to make it more sustainable, to be more responsible to the environment with how we deal with our waste, and those things cost more money too. So it's an ongoing discussion within the community about what we want to do with solid waste, and then, of course, how do we pay for the programs that support that.
Taking a look at Wednesday's agenda, council meeting and work session starting at about 3:40. First, with a presentation by the Central Utah Water Conservancy District, known as the CUP. And this includes reservoirs like Starvation, Strawberry, Deer Creek, and Jordan Elmore locally. And it looks like we're talking about a small tax increase. It looks like they're facing a $5 million shortfall.
Well, that looks like what their staff packet is saying as well. But annually, this Water Conservancy District, they have a policy that they want to keep their mill levy consistent for years. So every year that I've measured in the agenda to hold their mill levy, at least hold their mill levy. Now, if they have extra projects that they need to do with their water system, I'm sure they can move above that. But this has been a consistent item on the council's agenda every year.
Okay, let's see real quick. The county fair is happening, kicks off Friday, August 6th, running through Saturday, August 14th. Other than it's happening this year, any highlights you wanted to share?
Well, I think some of the highlights, the Fair Board has been working extremely hard on trying to lower the transient room tax subsidy that has traditionally been provided to the fair to run that event. They're doing so and quite successfully. They're really looking at some of those large events, everything from ticket prices to really working hard on sponsorships in order to reduce the cost to the county on those events, all in an effort to make it more viable. We have several events in the county that are sustainable and even help pay for facilities around events, specifically, but events that happen in Summit County. And I think we're trying to move the fair in that direction as well. It's going to be a slow process, but the folks they have working on that are working very diligently.
Okay. Also, I wanted to mention that a change in the budget is the sheriff's request for a new step pay increase program. It sounds like this is a go. What kind of budget impact will this have on the rest of the year's budget?
Well, I mean, if you'll remember the first discussion, we wanted to take a look at the sheriff's office current 2021 budget in order to see if we could implement that that stepped program in the current year without having to do a budget amendment. And that would be a combination of salary savings and other underspent line items in the sheriff's budget. It looks like we'll be able to do that. So it's made for the 2021 year. It's certainly a situation where they just needs to give us a nod that they want to move into that program. Of course, that then has to be on future budget because that is a decision that become ongoing. And so we'll have to look at that approximate $325,000 to $350,000 increase that would cause the sheriff's budget and how we're going to fit that in for the 2022 budget.
Okay, and finally, just wanted to ask about the meeting for Dakota Pacific. There was some talk that there might be a special meeting over these 2 weeks. That didn't happen. Anything set on the calendar at this point?
Well, we have not set it specifically. We've had some internal meetings with a subset of the council, just as we had been working through some charrettes in a similar manner. We have another meeting with the staff and the Dakota Pacific folks this Friday. I think we're going to be able to set a date for them after we hear from them this Friday.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention, Tom?
No, nothing. Thank you very much, Liz.
That's Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. Thanks. And still to come, I'll be talking with Park City Board of Realtors Executive Director Jamie Johnson, along with real estate broker and owner of Real Estate Solutions Group, Nate Johnson. He recently presented a seminar on smart growth to our local realtors. And later on, Park City Leadership Founder and Director Miles Rademan has details on applying for next year's leadership group will be Class 28. Well, Park City's Haley Batten had the best finish for Team USA, finishing ninth in the Olympic mountain bike competition today in Tokyo. In a difficult course made even more challenging by the rain, Batten finished the 20.5-kilometer race, 5-lap course in 1 hour, 20 minutes, 13 seconds. Her teammates Kate Courtney finished 15th, Aaron Huck finishing 31st. Well, Heber City leaders say the public has spoken and now they're taking action on a new plan to revitalize downtown. Last week, the Heber City Council voted to create a new tool to create funding for redevelopment. KPCW's Ben Lasseter explains.
Heber City Council intends to redevelop the downtown area over the next 20 to 30 years. The plan is called Envision Heber 2050. Heber City Manager Matt Brower says it was drafted based on public input and is intended to increase tourism and boost the local economy.
So we heard that the community wanted us to maintain that small town feel and charm, but also make sure the downtown is on solid economic footing for the next 30 to 40 years. In the Envision Heber document, one of those goals was to make downtown a regional destination for annual gatherings and traditions that Heber residents could enjoy, to take underused spaces or reimagine them into significant new places to work, live, and enjoy, to improve pedestrian and bike accessibility, parking and traffic conditions along Main Street, and to preserve, enhance, and improve access to valued places and buildings.
Last Tuesday, Heber City Council approved a financial strategy to finance part of Envision Heber. By a vote of 3-1, Council created a Community Reinvestment Area, or CRA, around Main Street. This will give the city more influence over the development in an 80-acre zone between Airport Road and 1200 North Street. It will also generate money for developments by Heber City itself, such as for improvements to infrastructure like water and sewer lines. It will also offer incentives for private developments. Over the next 20 years, the city expects to generate $36 million to reinvest in the project area. City Manager Matt Brower explains how the CRA works by reappropriating property tax revenues to be reinvested in the project area.
What the CRA is simply is an economic tool that can be leveraged by the city to bring about the vision that was captured in our Envision Heber 2050 initiative. The way the CRA generates its revenue is off existing property taxes and valuation increases that come from properties within the district. So in other words, you might have an investor come in and invest in a property, and that investment is obviously going to bring about a higher valuation, and that valuation is going to result in a higher tax, and it's that increment, the higher tax, that's going to go into the agency to be invested in that downtown area.
Brower says the CRA is not a new tax, an increase on an existing tax, or a land use decision. Other Utah cities that have used CRAs include Midway, Moab, Salt Lake City, Sandy, West Valley City, and Holiday Village. According to Brower, the CRA will generate funding for more affordable housing. The statute that allows CRAs to exist in Utah requires 10% of the revenue it generates to be set aside for that. Brower says this is needed right now, as valuations of property in the city and Wasatch County have gone up by 36% over the last year.
In Wasatch County and Heber, we have an affordable housing crisis. And so we're pleased that the CRA will be simply a tool in our toolbox to try to help with some affordable housing issues.
Next, the city will ask other taxing entities to contribute tax increments to be invested in downtown Heber City. Mayor Kellen Potter said Heber's begun talks with entities like Wasatch County and the school district, but no agreements have been made. Ben Lassiter, KPCW News.
Like the rest of the state and much of the country recently, a thick cover of smoke has been hanging above Summit and Wasatch counties. According to Ashley Sumner of the Utah Department of Environmental Quality, our area could be due for a reprieve this week.
Good news. It really looks like there over the next day or so, we're going to have those upper level winds that are shifting, and they should move or keep most of the smoke out of northern Utah. The moisture we expect over the next day or so as well. So with that shift, we expect hopefully some monsoon moisture, good for our drought and our air quality because it needs more cloud cover, and that'll help in reducing ozone pollution.
The DEQ does offer tips about how to adapt to hazy skies, especially those who have sensitive lungs. She says people should take heed if they experience discomfort from breathing.
We recommend avoiding outdoor activity on days where it is unhealthy for sensitive populations from about 12 to 7. That's when we tend to see the worst ozone air pollution. With the added factor of wildfire smoke, folks may it extend into earlier or later in the day. So we really ask people to listen to their bodies.
The recent heavy smoke has been a product of fires from California, Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. Fires in those states have grown larger than those here in Utah. KPCW News Time now, 8:30. Well, earlier this month, members of the Park City Board of Realtors learned a bit more about smart growth, a multi-hour presentation by Nate Johnson, the broker and owner of Real Estate Solutions Group out of St. Louis. Nate joins me on the phone along with the CEO of the Park City Board of Realtors, Jamie Johnson, in studio. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Leslie. Thanks for having us.
And Nate, do I have you?
Good morning, Leslie. How are you today?
I'm doing great, thanks. So first, Jamie, maybe you start and just tell us, why did the Board of Realtors bring Nate out to speak to members?
Right. So from the Board of Realtors' perspective, we are advocates for homeownership and property rights, property values. We care deeply about our community. And so we reached out to Nate, as he is one of six instructors in the country that is certified to teach this course on smart growth in the 21st century. And wanted him to come out and to teach our members more about what that looks like. There's a lot of confusion about growth and are we growing too fast? Are we growing too slow? But how can we do it in a smart way? And so there are 10 principles that the National Association of Realtors have set as priorities when it comes to smart growth in our century. And we had Nate come out and just teach our members on that. So it was a 3-hour course. We had it at the Santee Auditorium, and the city and counties both were represented there as individuals who wanted to come and hear more about what this is all about and what it can look like in our community.
Yeah, so what was your takeaway?
Yeah, so I went into it not really knowing because I've never sat through the course before, but it was very interesting to me to see that we are doing some things well here when it comes to walkability, and we are trying to make things easy for people to get around either on a bike or with trails or with our sidewalks, that we are offering that component in our small town, in our small community, with the limited amount of land that we have. And so I think we're starting to do a better job with mixed land use and trying to find ways that we can accommodate more people in smaller areas. I think there are still a lot of uphill battles, though, with the limited amount of space that we have and the transportation issues that we have in getting people to and from and in and out of our town.
All right, so this was for realtors. I mean, I think we did see a smattering of public officials as well.
We did. We invited all of our city and county officials, as well as our council members, city managers, planners. We reached out to the entire Wasatch BAC, actually. So not only Summit, but also Wasatch County, as we feel that this is a regional issue and that we want to see them work together and learn more about these issues in the same environment. So we have had a few meetings with both counties in the last couple of months to really try and get everybody on the same page and learning what some options could be for our future.
Okay, so Nate, as Jamie mentioned, you're just one of six instructors. So this is a presentation that you make nationwide?
Yeah, that's correct. I have the honor to travel all over our country talking with realtors and other community leaders about smart growth and how to build your community in a sustainable way, taking into account both the built environment as well as the natural environment. And, you know, one of the things about smart growth is it's unique to each community. So every place that I visit has something different. They have unique opportunities and unique challenges. And it's my role to help communities understand what those are. And hopefully by the time I leave, the members and attendees feel engaged to take the next step to sort of create the outcomes that their community deserves.
So if I could get you to get a little bit closer to whatever microphone you're using, it sounds like you're on a speakerphone. It's just not a great connection. Maybe just start. I mean, Jamie mentioned 10 principles of smart growth. Maybe you can start by telling us, what is smart growth?
So smart growth is that a little better? Hopefully that's a little better.
That's a lot better. Thank you. That's a lot better.
Okay, fantastic. Smart growth is really somewhat of a movement that really works to help our communities sort of grow in a way that responds to current market demands. You know, when we think about how our communities have developed throughout the years and centuries, so to speak, what we look at now is creating a space where we've got walkable neighborhoods, we're taking advantage of compact building design, fostering a strong sense of place, and, you know, mixing land uses, those sorts of things. Those are just a couple of the smart growth principles that I work to instruct and help realtors and other community leaders understand and see where they fit in within the context of development within their communities.
So how do you think smart growth differs from what is traditionally done in communities, or has been done traditionally in communities?
Well, the challenge that we have is that when we look at how our communities have developed, often, depending on the powers that be at the given time the development's taking place, it may be very car-centric. That's one of the challenges that we have, is a lot of our communities have been developed in a way that really is built for cars. And one of the things about smart growth is to say, hey, you know what? People are a part of this. It's not just about cars. How can we get people out of their cars and feel safe and comfortable walking in our communities, riding bikes, taking advantage of public transportation and those sorts of things as well. So when we look at, you know, sort of moving the buildings up closer to the lot lines and, you know, not making the parking the showcase of the development, that's one of the things that we've seen historically. When we look at the 70s and 80s and construction that was taking place at that time, it was really very, very car centric. And one of the things about smart growth, as I mentioned, is that, you know, it looks to sort of take the focus off of the car. Cars are very important, obviously, and they're still a part of the development process, but just not the only focus of it.
So you took a look at Park City's Vision 2020 plan, noting that there's a delicate balance between tourists and residents, and basically it's a double-edged sword. If we take their tax dollars, then we get their traffic and crowds as well?
Yes, it is a double-edged sword. Absolutely right. And that's where that balance comes into play. When we look at, okay, what is best for the community? What is best for the people that live there? What's best for the visitors as well? Because when you're looking at a resort community where there's a lot of tourism in place, it's obviously important to balance those things, because not everyone that has located to that area, you know, is on board with the way that things have developed and have evolved. So that's where that balance comes in. How do we preserve the spaces that are great for the people that live there, but also provide economic development opportunities by way of tourism and that sort of, and other options to just create the types of communities that make sense, that, you know, our children will be proud of, our grandchildren, and so on.
And given the thousands of units that have already been approved, especially in Wasatch County, just on Park City's back door there, I mean, is it too late to implement these smart growth principles?
It's never too late, Leslie. You know, what we know about a plan is that it can always be changed. And if there are concerns about the way that the current plan is being implemented, then it's up to the thought leaders within the community, realtors, and other community leaders to get a seat at the table, able to have conversations about potentially making adjustments to make sure that we're looking at affordability, we're looking at developing the community in a way that makes sense. And in looking at the Vision 2020, there definitely is affordability components in there. It's a great plan, in my opinion. It's always evolving, I believe. I think that anytime a plan is created, it's never done. It's a living, breathing document, and it always needs to be looked at and tweaked and adjusted to sort of meet the demands of the times, because every day, hopefully, we learn more and we grow more. And that is one of the things that I hope to bring to the table when I'm talking with communities about smart growth.
Yeah, and when we talk about the affordability, I mean, who is it then that pays to move that out of a car-centric, to provide the transportation choices, to pay for the open space?
Well, when we're looking at how the community develops, you know, it's everybody. Everybody's paying for it. You know, it just depends on what becomes more important, what's most important to the community. Is it that we have affordable housing that's available for the people that work here in the community, or is that not important? Because at the end of the day, the community, it's up to the community to decide what is most important in terms of how we're going to develop. So when we ask who's going to pay for that, certainly it's partially funded by the residents, the people that live there, taxpayers. It's certainly funded by the visitors, the tourists that come in town, and other economic development engines such as businesses and so on and so forth. So everybody's responsible for it, so we all need to be paying for it as well.
So you spent a day, I think, after the presentation, kind of looking at our area. What did you think? I mean, have we implemented these smart growth techniques?
I thought Park City was amazing. It was a wonderful place to visit. I had never been there before. And certainly, you know, just being there for a limited amount of time doesn't necessarily give me a full sense of what's taking place in terms of smart growth development. However, in looking at the plan and what I did see, it looks like you're on the right track. And it's, again, extremely important to make sure that that plan that's in place, that Vision 2020, is always looked at and always being revised and edited and tweaked, just to make sure that it makes the most sense, because again, every day we're learning, so we want to make sure we're creating the best outcomes. And if we're stuck with a plan that is rigid and we're not in a position to alter that plan, then we're going to fail our community. We always have to be in a space where we can make different decisions, make better decisions once we have better and more information.
Okay, I also wanted just to ask you to talk a little bit about how smart growth is used as an economic development tool for communities.
Yeah, it's an economic development tool because you're taking advantage of a compact building design and providing a variety of housing choices. So if you're looking specifically at how we're providing a variety of housing choices, then you're recruiting and attracting people that may be interested in those various types of housing opportunities that exist. So as a result, that's an economic development engine for your community by being able to recruit, attract, and retain talent that you want to see in the area. And a lot of that is based on being able to provide the types of housing choices that are attractive to those groups. Additionally, providing a range of of ways to move around, you know, making sure that you don't have a community that's built just for cars, you know, making sure that you've got a space where you're providing a variety of transportation choices becomes very important, because those are the types of things that are extremely attractive to the creative class, to our knowledge workers that most of our communities around the country are looking to recruit, attract, and retain. And obviously businesses are responsive to that as well, because if that's where the talent is, that's where they're looking to locate, that's where they're looking to stay, because they want to recruit those knowledge workers as well.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to add, Nate?
Well, you know, I'll tell you, I love Park City. It was a mind-blowing experience for me to be there, having never been there. And it's just such a beautiful region that you guys have. And the work that you're doing with the Vision 2020 and other economic development and community visioning and planning initiatives are amazing. It's just wonderful. And I'll tell you, I feel like you're definitely a step above, a step ahead of many of the communities that I visit. So you guys are on the right track. I love it. And, you know, it was really great to be in Park City to talk with realtors and other community leaders about smart growth.
Okay. And then, Jamie, any feedback from your members?
Yes, actually, we had a lot of positive feedback. It was really nice to stand with Nate at the very end and have individuals just come up and constantly give him accolades for coming and for giving them the information and how eye-opening it was for them. So we have had very positive feedback, and we're getting more realtors who are wanting to be involved, where we are going to attempt to start another affordable housing committee within our association to get realtors involved in the discussions with the communities, as well as we are hosting a little over a month from now on August 31st from 4 to 7 p.m. in the parking lot right behind our building at 1889 Prospector Avenue, Housing Opportunity Expo, where we will host the city, the county, Mountainlands, Habitat, the Christian Center. I think we're going to attempt to have some of the other local nonprofits that are available that help with housing or rent assistance going to be there to talk with our consumers that are in the area that need that help. So we are going to be doing a little more promotion on that over the next month, but are already putting the plans together for that on August 31st.
Okay. All right. Jamie and Nate, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks so much for your
time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Leslie.
Leadership Park City once again accepting applications is for Class 28. On the phone with details is the founder and director of the program, Miles Redeman. Good morning, Miles.
Good morning, Wesley.
So applications are now available. How do people apply?
Yeah, it's pretty simple. You can apply online. And when I say online, you go to the city's website, which is parkcity.org. And right on the home page is an icon that says Leadership Park City. You click on that and all the information is there. So all the information about the schedule for the year and the application form itself are all online, and it's very simple these days.
All right, so what does it take to get in?
Sometimes perseverance, but mostly just the desire to be a part of the community, to gain some perspective, and to participate. You know, over the years, as you said, this is our 28th year class that we're recruiting for, and you know, we've been very successful over the last 28 years. We normally get anywhere from 75 to over 120 applications a year. And because of size limitations and budget, we can only take usually in the neighborhood of 30 to 35 people a year. So we're looking for people who really represent the broad range of what we think Park City is. We have a selection committee that reads every application, and the criteria are all printed on our website, so there's nothing secret about that. But they read every application and they score them according to the criteria, and they try to put together a class that is representative of the greater Park City community. And when I say greater Park City community, anyone who lives or works in the greater Park City area, and again, we define that very broadly and always have, so that's all of Summit County, Wasatch County, and we have people who live down in the valley, in Salt Lake Valley, who apply and do get into the program. Because if you work up here, and this is really the nexus of your professional life, let's say, we're interested in having you apply as well, because that adds a depth to the experience of the class.
So you're still seeing the demand that you have in the past, huh?
Well, you know, the community is growing, and of course, I just listened to the segment on smart growth. Of course, none of us support dumb growth. So what does smart growth mean? Well, there's all the physical aspects of it, of course, of having infrastructure, trails, schools, things of that nature, you know, open space. But there's also, you know, the community aspect of it. Communities that invest in their future leaders, I think that's smart growth too. That's bringing a new group of people in, not making it us and them. People are moving here. Many of them want to be involved. We don't force involvement. This isn't sort of a mind school. But, you know, people who'd like to get involved in the community, who want to lead, who want to bring the skills with them that they've developed over a lifetime and contribute back to the community, we're very interested in those people. And that's what the program is about, is really community building. And we call it leadership because leadership is community building.
All right. How has the program worked through COVID? It sounds like you haven't missed a beat.
Well, we've missed a few beats like everyone else. I mean, we've kept the program going. And certainly when COVID hit full on last March, well, a year ago March, boy, time goes slowly here. But we had to go to Zoom like everyone else. And so last year's class 26, they had to do half of their year on Zoom. And we couldn't do the city tour that was always part of the program. So we had to cancel that last year. And then when we recruited class 27, we made it clear that we probably would be on Zoom until we could get together in person again. And so we were on Zoom for the first half of this year's class, and we just started to meet again in June in person, and we'll meet again in September, October, and we're having a city tour this year in November for this year's class and anyone from last year's class who'd like to attend. So we have had to adapt like every other organization and every family in the world probably has had to adapt, but it has worked. Certainly, our program is so hands-on and person-on and touchy-feely in a way that we're happy to be back together and see each other in person, because that is the heart of the program. It's not just giving knowledge to people, and that's part of the program, to explain things, to have speakers and things of that nature, but really it's the interaction of the class itself that's the heart of the program, and that's hard on Zoom. And that's hard for every organization. I mean, we're not alone in that. So we've been grappling with it. It's worked, but we're hoping that if everybody gets vaccinated or has to wear masks, that we can continue to meet in person again.
So when does the new class begin?
Well, so let me just go through the schedule here. Applications are due by August 20th. So, you know, it's less than a month. And people always say, I'll put it off. I've been thinking of doing, I hear this every year, and someone will call me on the 21st or, you know, of August and say, oh, I forgot, you know. But really, we only do it once a year. We do have a hard cutoff on the 20th of August. So if you're thinking of applying, if you've applied before but haven't gotten in, it's not a personality contest here. Sometimes we just can't take everyone who applies. You know, we'd love to. Probably 95% of all the people who apply should be in the program. So I just want to state that out front. So if you apply, then we do the selection in September, and the class will start in the beginning of October. And
okay.
It goes for a whole year. So year-long class. A program, it's more than a class, it's a program, because we have all-day programs, but most of our programs are from 3 in the afternoon until 9 at night. We move around to different venues within the community. We do go to the state legislature for a whole day in January. We do a city tour. We go out to the county and meet with them in Colville. So there's a bit of moving around, and we also do a ropes course. We work closely with the NAC. And I should say that the program is a community-wide program. It's sponsored by the entire community. We have partners in that. KPCW is one of them, but so is the county. So are the ski resorts. So is the Board of Realtors that just talked, and the chamber and the city. So it is a community-wide program. We've run it through the city. It's just been easier that way administratively. But it is a community-wide program.
So those that have gone through the program, I mean, what do they tell you? What have they gotten out of being a participant?
You know, everybody comes in with different skills and a different point in your life. And so it's up to the individual what they get out of it. But quite frankly, every year we do a debrief at the end of the program, and we ask that very specific question: what have you gotten out of it? Without fail, what they've gotten out of it is the network of contacts and friends and perspective they've gained from the other people in the program, from them, from their peers, quite frankly. So yes, we have, I think, very good programs that we arrange and that we feed you, and we bring in good speakers and interesting people and so forth. But, you know, when we ask people, what have you gotten out of it? They say, oh, all these people that we've met, and they've been so valuable in my future. You know, we go back over 27 years, we have some history here, and people say, oh, I wouldn't have done this if I hadn't met so-and-so in the program. So that, to me, is the key to what we do.
All right, so last year's city tour was supposed to go to Flagstaff and Sedona. You say it's been postponed. I think you changed locations as well.
I did. Yeah, we were going to go to Flagstaff and Sedona, someplace I still want to go. I was down there this year checking things out, and it was so busy. I mean, they were just overwhelmed, as we have been overwhelmed. All the resort areas are overwhelmed. They were totally overwhelmed, and they were changing a lot of personnel down there. And that was clear to me when I was down there. And so I said, you know, maybe we should postpone that another year, but we're certainly going to go back there. But we pivoted this year. We're going to go to Boise, Idaho, and to Ketchum and Sun Valley. And that's, those are places we have been, but we haven't been there in about 10 or 12 years. So we, you know, there's time to catch up there as well. And they're doing some great things up in those areas. Both of those cities are amazing.
We went there in 1989, too. I remember that. When's the last time you've been to Vail? And I reason why I ask, I'm just guessing with the PEG development application underway, I guess it would be interesting for future leaders to see how that town operates.
You know, it's been a while. I think we were in Vail the very year that they announced that they had purchased the Park City Mountain Resort. So how many years ago was I have to check with Rick Bruff. He's sort of my chronologer here. He remembers every place we've been, and he's been on a lot of these tours with us. So it's probably been a good 7 or 8 years, maybe 9 years. I'm not quite sure. But we will definitely go back to Vail in the near future as well. And as a matter of fact, PEG, I believe, and don't hold me to this, but I believe they're involved in a development project up in the Ketchum area as well.
Ah, okay. And actually, that was 1990, now that I look back. Mm. Yeah, that it was Vail, Ketchum. Anyway, you also put on an annual community leadership lecture. Who are you thinking about?
Boy, I haven't thought that far ahead. But we're always looking for somebody who can really speak to the broader community, because that's one of the things that we try to give back to the greater Park City community. We do that in March. And we invite the whole community to be there, and I think last year we broadcasted, actually, on KBCW, and I'd like to do that again this year. So, you know, I'm always open if people have the suggestion of somebody who would be a great speaker. You know, again, with the idea, it's not just about a current topic, but it's about leading in a current topic, because, you know, that's the focus of our program. What does leadership mean? What are the various aspects of leadership? So I look for people who are established leaders and who are dealing with something that's topical. So in the past, like last year, we were talking, of course, in the last couple of years, to our boats or our resorts, because that's so important to our economy and our future here. But I think I'd like to spread out from there and talk about some other topics this year. So I don't have anyone in mind at this point, but I'm open to suggestions. So if anybody sees me or wants to write to me, I'd be happy to hear about it.
Okay. Again, applications for Class 28 due August 20th. People can get more information by going to parkcity.org. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Well, just again, that, you know, we're really, we cast the net as widely as we can. We're looking for as many diverse voices as we can. That's been a hallmark of our program as well. Everybody who applies to the program and gets accepted gets a scholarship to participate. That's what all of our partners do. They chip in the money and the resources so that there is a sense of equity. And we've done that from day one in the program. That money was not the driving force about who would be in the program and get this training. So it's the community investing back in its future leaders that I think is so exciting about what we do. And if you'd all considered being in a leadership program and meeting other people who are passionate about what they do and about the future of the community, please apply. It'll take you about 20 minutes or a half hour online to apply. It's pretty simple. And we wish you the best of luck. So don't wait till the last minute. You know, get online right now, parkcity.org.
Okay, Miles, thank you.
Leslie, thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Miles Radiman is the founder and director of Leadership Park City.